From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of June 2019. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. We'll hear from this morning's Senate Finance Committee meeting with U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer in the Ag News. We'll talk about what happened in yesterday afternoon's crop progress report from the state statisticians in Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa. We'll look in on the weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and take up the agricultural energies with Dave Chatterton of the Powerline Group. It should be a busy afternoon. Stay with us on this Tuesday edition of the program. It's Public Radio for the Farming World.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, July corn today, a nickel lower at $4.49¾. December there at $4.63, down 5½. March 4¾ lower at $4.68¼. July beans 3/4 higher at $9.13½. November at $9.40¼, up 3/4. And January at $9.52¼, a penny and a half higher. The bean oil up 19 cents. The bean meal down $2.30. 8 cents lower in the July soft red winter wheat at $5.31½ on its settlement. And the hard red wheat down 10¼ at $4.65¼. Let's take a look at these numbers and what they mean with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. It was a turnaround Tuesday, but not the kind I suppose you really like, Wayne. Thanks for being with us.
Well, you know, we did make some awfully good moves here over the last few weeks, and we went up and made some five-year highs in some cases, and a little correction was due, and but we don't think it's going to be sustained real long because the weather's just too wet for a sustained break right here. But a lot of news today, you know, talking about President Trump is going to talk, and we're going to have our trade negotiators get back with the Chinese. That's real good. We talked about the possibility of the blender's credit being reinstated and being retroactive, and that helped the bean market hold together. So, you know, between the Chinese talk and the blender's credit and over the full moon we experienced here early this week, a lot of things going on that could make this market a little nervous, especially when we don't know how many acres going to prevent plant. And when somebody said, I'm done planting corn, and they figured that into what wasn't left to plant, and they maybe still had 500 acres they didn't get planted.
Yeah, and the summer solstice is coming up, too, on the 21st, so all of those.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. you know, there's something else to, you know, take things that I'm sure that's in Kurt's manual or the almanac.
Oh, it probably is. He did not mention it yesterday, but you're probably right. although it is the year of the nine, as you will recall. And so that's what we started with yesterday. So what are producers to make of this kind of two-day swing? You mentioned that it's probably just a momentary setback. What kind of upside potential do you think we have? What distance time frame do we have between now and when things might begin to move again?
Well, I think that as we look at things here, there's a lot of talk and decision and indecision as to how much many prevent plant acres we're going to have. The idea, it's awfully hard to rate corn for the growing conditions here as small as it is in many cases, or in some cases not even out of the ground. Also with the beans, we should get the first ratings next week on those. But I think that, you know, we're looking at 7 to 8 million acres of corn that didn't get planted, and probably 1 to 2.5 million acres of beans that might not get planted. So that way. I think one of the things, and we need to look real close and see what's it going to cost to bring in corn from South America. You know, what is going to be the price that we start seeing that happen rather than paying for corn locally like that. So I think that's going to be one of the big things to look at. But the long-range forecast offered now, there's a little warmer and drier weather out there 2 weeks, but you know, we've got a lot of rain this week and next in the eastern Midwest, and it's going to stay sort of wet that way. So I think that it's going to be a couple months before we can get much of a handle on how much corn went into the prevent plant program, Todd. And that's going to be awfully hard to assess to see where we're really at. But I think that we've got another run up here coming along sometime, whether it's later this week or next week along the way. But you know, it's going to be a very choppy affair here, looking at a lot of things, and it's going to depend a lot on what happens in Japan at the G20 meeting.
Are supply-led, and I'll go with supply rather than demand-led until we get to the G20 later and see what happens, but are supply-led rallies more led by basis in the cash market or by the futures market?
Well, they're led more by the basis in the cash market, to be very honest, Todd, because we're trying to relocate grain is what we're trying to do. You know, the world isn't short of grain right now. It's just in the wrong places for where we want part of it. So, you know, that way. You know, we look down and, you know, Brazil raised their corn production just a little bit again this last week. And that we're looking at India. The planting's delayed 2 weeks. It's a poor monsoon so far. They've only got a percentage of that way. So, you know, we're looking at one area that's good and one area that's maybe fading back a little bit that way. So, you know, the 11 to 16 day forecast gives us above normal temperatures, but average rainfall crossed out there that way. So we are running short of degree day units now, growing degree days, and that's going to start taking effect in what people are thinking about. Some of the long-range forecasts say we don't need to worry a lot about frost, but if my corn's just popping through the ground, I'm sure going to be worrying about it.
Hey, Wayne, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org. Again, the address, willag.org. In today's agricultural news, the Senate Finance Committee had U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer in front of it today. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley told the Trump administration's lead trade representative that he was not a fan of how the president uses tariffs to achieve trade policy goals.
I fear that continuing to use tariffs in this way will undermine our credibility with our current and potential trading partners and actually undo the benefits of our historic tax reform. Since March 2018, U.S. Customs and Border Protections have assessed over $15 billion in Section 301 tariffs and over $6.5 billion in Section 232 steel and aluminum tariffs. So, to be clear, American importers and consumers are paying for these tariffs. $22 billion out of the pockets of hardworking Americans is not in our national interest.
Senator Grassley also expressed concern that the United States might need to use Section 301, that's the tariff authority granted the president, to enforce parts of the new USMCA trade deal because it does not include enough enforcement mechanisms. Ambassador Lighthizer assured him 99% of the enforcement mechanisms are in the agreement that has yet to be ratified by the U.S. Congress. Lighthizer told the Senate committee he expects the Speaker of the House to bring the NAFTA replacement up for discussion sometime in the next 2 weeks. On the trade negotiations with China, Oregon Senator Ron Wyden pressed Lighthizer on how the Trump administration was considering the impact of current and future tariffs, pointing out that the next round would, some $300 billion put in place, cause many products like cell phones and computers to become more expensive, especially, he thought, for college students. Lighthizer countered by explaining the trade negotiations today were about America's future.
None of this makes any sense unless you think we have a problem with China stealing our intellectual property. And I would say to those college students, if China steals your intellectual property, you're not going to have jobs in the future. And much worse, your children are not going to have jobs in the future. So to me, the first question we have to establish is China a problem? Is a $450 billion trade deficit with China a problem? If you think not, then none of this makes any sense. If you think it does, then you have to do it as cleverly as you can, I would confess. And it's not easy. If you think China's not stealing our intellectual property, then we shouldn't do this. If you think they're not forcing technology transfer, you shouldn't do this. If you think they're not grossly subsidizing and taking over our markets, then we shouldn't do these things. But to us, we believe that's the case. We think we had an untenable situation with China, one that should have been addressed, frankly, a couple of decades ago. It's a long history of them violating the norms of intellectual property and similar norms. moving forward and not and making promises and not keeping the promises.
As for the TPP, or the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that's the trade deal President Trump opted out of when he first took office and that has since been agreed to by the other 11 countries, Lighthizer thinks it was a bad deal and would not have reined China in over time. Still, he says, TPP is being implemented, and my concern is that farmers are taking the biggest hit from this. Trade Representative Lighthizer is specifically worried about trade with Japan that is now being circumvented by the TPP deal, or the renamed version of that, that does not include the United States. This, he says, makes it imperative that the United States strike its own deal with Japan very soon. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 92% of the corn crop has been planted. That compares to the 100% yearly average over the last 5 years. 79% of that crop is up and growing compared to 97%. It's said to be in 52% good and 7% excellent condition. That's the same as the previous week. Last year, those condition numbers were 59% good and 19% excellent. 77% of the soybeans have been sown compared to 93% on the rolling five-year average. 55% of the crop is up and growing. We do not expect a condition report on the soybeans until next week. Looking at the winter wheat crop at this time, it shows that 89% of the crop is headed. 95% is the rolling five-year average. 8% has been harvested compared to 20% on the five-year average. 51% is said to be in good condition, 13% in excellent. Now, here are updates from the statisticians in Iowa, Illinois, and Minnesota.
This is Brad Medlock, agricultural statistician for the USDA NASS Upper Midwest Regional Field Office. For the second week in a row, mostly dry weather conditions allowed Iowa farmers to get work done in their fields. Statewide, there were 5.3 days suitable for field work during the week ending June 16, 2019. Field work activities included planting and replanting of crops, harvesting hay, spraying and applying nitrogen. Topsoil moisture levels rated 0% very short, 4% short, 77% adequate, and 19% surplus. Corn planting has nearly finished with 98% of the expected corn crop planted. 88% of the crop has emerged, over 2 weeks behind last year and the five-year average. Corn condition improved slightly to 59% good to excellent. 89% of the expected soybean crop has been planted, 16 days behind last year and 2 weeks behind average. 63% of the crop has emerged, 2 weeks behind average. The first soybean condition rating of the season came in at 2% very poor, 4% poor, 33% fair, 53% good, and 8% excellent. Dry weather allowed over one quarter of the first cutting of alfalfa hay to be harvested last week, reaching 61% complete. Hay condition improved to 65% good to excellent. For the USDA NASS Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, this is Brad Medlock.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Illinois weather was cooler than normal and dry enough for field work until near the end of the week. Overall, the state average temperature was nearly 6 degrees below normal. Rainfall ranged from just over 1/2 inch to more than 2 inches around the state, and the state average was almost 1.5 inches of rain, which is 1/2 inch above normal. There was an average of 4.8 days suitable for field work around Illinois. Topsoil moisture levels declined and are now rated 2% short, 62 adequate, and 36% surplus. Corn planting is nearly finished at 88% compared to 100% for the five-year average. 74% of corn acres have emerged compared to 99% normally. The condition of the Illinois corn crop was rated as 15% very poor to poor, 34% fair, and 51% good to excellent, which is a little better than 1 week ago. Soybean planting is now 70% finished compared to 95% normally. 50% of soybean acres have emerged compared to 88% normally. Turning now to winter wheat, 97% of acres have headed compared to 100% normally. 6% of acres have been harvested compared to 26% 1 year ago and 21% for the five-year average. The condition of the Illinois wheat crop improved a little and was rated as 22% very poor to poor, 45% fair, and 33% good to excellent. The first cutting of alfalfa hay is now 73% finished. That compares to 89% normally. Other hay harvest is 61% finished compared to 82% normally. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, State Statistician for the USDA NASS Minnesota Field Office, with a weekly Crop Progress and Industry Report. Favorable weather patterns gave Minnesota farmers 5.0 days suitable for field work during the week. Planting is starting to wrap up in Minnesota as operators turn to spraying and fertilizing their crops as conditions allow. Cooler than normal temperatures are still slowing crop development, however, crops continue to emerge this week. Most rain showers were observed over the southeast district of Minnesota. Minnesota corn planted was nearly completed this week, with 87% of the corn crop emerged. That's 2 weeks behind normal. Corn condition was rated 58% good to excellent. Soybeans were 94% planted, while 70% of the soybean crop had emerged, nearly 2 weeks behind last year and the five-year average. The first crop condition rating for soybeans came in at 1% very poor, 3% poor, 30% fair, 59% good, and 7% excellent. Nearly all of the spring wheat crop had emerged, while spring wheat jointed reached 39%. That's 10 days behind average. Spring wheat condition rated 86%, good to excellent. Barley emergence was practically complete, while barley jointed was 49%. That's 5 days behind normal. Barley condition remained steady at 78%, good to excellent. The first cutting of alfalfa hay was 54% complete. That's 4 days behind last year and the five-year average. All hay condition rated 71%, good to excellent. That's up from the previous week. For the USDA NASS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly crop progress updates. Just as a reminder, that 92% planted for corn is of what the farmer plans to plant for the rest of this year. It is a rolling forecast not pegged to the March Prospective Plantings Report. Can use it to figure final planting dates and estimate yields. Yes, it includes PP and failed acres, just eyeballed, kind of in the same way that you would windshield a crop. It is 92% of the crop is in the ground that farmers can actually get in the ground. On this Tuesday, let's now turn our attention to the weather forecast. Don Day is here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. A little gray here, Don. It's not been very warm, actually. It was muggy a couple of days, but gosh, sunshine and heat would be nice. How about where you are?
Well, you know, more of the same. A very, very cool out west. In fact, for the second time in the month of June and probably on the first day of summer, tourists in Yellowstone Park are going to see snow again. Just a very cool weather pattern across the northern and central part of the United States, and it's going to not warm up or dry out really anywhere in the nation's midsection or west, at least here for another week to 10 days.
Does that cool weather translate into cool across the Corn Belt as well?
It will, and it also is going to lead to some increased chances for getting wet again. Now, over the last 7 to 10 days or so, it hasn't been wet. Some areas have dried out and warmed up a little bit, but what will happen is we're going to see troughs come from the Pacific Northwest through the Northern Rockies and into the Dakotas, and this will help trigger more shower and thunderstorm activity. That, in a sense, is going to cool us off a little bit. But it also is not allowing the establishment of a Southern Plains or Gulf Coast high pressure that tends to develop in the summer season that then expands and grows northward. And so that just keeps delaying it. So every time we talk, it looks like we just delay the establishment of a summer high another week or 10 days, and we're starting to look at the calendar, and here we are in the second half of June, and still don't see through the rest of June that establishment of a bona fide summer pattern yet.
What do our nighttime lows look like?
Well, that's one thing that may help out. With the wet ground, the clouds, the precipitation, that does keep those overnight temperatures a little warmer. So while daytime temperatures may be a bit below average, you're a little bit above average at night, and that may help some folks out a little bit. For anybody, though, looking for a prolonged stretch of warm or even hot summer weather, even in the desert southwest, it's not developing.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate so much the work you do, and look forward to talking with you again next week.
Sounds good.
All right, that's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Dave Chatterton now joins us from the Powerline Group right here in Champaign to talk about the agricultural energies. It's a late start to the growing season. I don't have to tell anybody that one. However, propane might be needed in large quantities for drying later this year. Is there any reason to think that this might be worthwhile at this point to book in some needs?
Yeah, Todd, I think it's definitely something that we should be looking at here. We know the situation with our crop here locally, regionally, and across the belt, and propensity for, you know, a late crop and so far kind of a sluggish growing degree day profile could create a, you know, some problems in the fall here logistically. Luckily, propane inventories have been on the way up here, and prices are the lowest that we've seen since 2016. So currently in Conway, we're seeing a wholesale gateway price, which is the Midwest supply, of about 37.5 cents. And that's, you know, if we go back and look at at those prices historically, that's the cheapest since we've seen since July of 2016. 27 cents on the wholesale level would be the cheapest price that we've seen really over the last, our database going back to 2006. We've only spent 3 weeks below that 30-cent level in that entire time period. So prices are approaching some what we'll call historic support and price lows here. I think it's important that farmers are aware of that and looking. We've seen people be able to do summer fill programs on farm with transports under 50 cents here in the Midwest, and that just doesn't leave a lot of downside risk in your price profile. So it's one thing that you can be proactive on and looking at as you look towards fall here.
And speaking of risk, there appears to be increased risk at this point in the Mideast as it relates to crude oil. What are your concerns, if any?
Yeah, very interesting market dynamic. Geopolitics have definitely come back to the forefront here. Crude and diesel fuel prices or refined fuel prices for our purposes remain kind of subdued here. They're actually, you know, still on the cycle down. We've flattened ourselves out here a little bit. But if you look at what's going on, we've got an OPEC meeting that was scheduled to take place at the end of this month that now looks like it will push into the first or second week of July. They're trying to roll their production cuts over for the second half of the year. And on top of that, we've got the risk of what happens with these political events, with Iran, U.S. ramping up pressure on Iran, with the attacks that we've seen in the Gulf and many other things. So seasonally, this would be the time of the year that we would typically be coming in and looking for that low in diesel fuel. And I think this year that makes sense. If you look at where prices have been, we were, you know, as high as 215 here for diesel fuel futures back in mid-May. And, you know, we've gotten down to currently around the 180, 182 level. We got as low as 175. So that's about a 19% drop, high to low. That's probably a pretty good catching point here. It looks like it will catch some support going forward. So, again, I'd be thinking forward and looking at those fall diesel fuel prices as well.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Dave Chatterton with the Powerline Group. Joins us on this Tuesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. He helps us to wrap it up for the day. You can find and listen to our programming anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Everything from the Opening Market Report to the Closing Market Report. And the midday at around 11 o'clock and at 1 o'clock, Sue Martin is there. You can find it all at willag.org and listen to it on demand. Or if you prefer, you can use any of those really great podcast applications. I'm still working to get iTunes hooked back up, but we're a lot closer today than we were yesterday. I'll let you know when that ends up in place. You can use Spotify and Google Play, Stitcher, and the SoundCloud app, and of course the NPR One app as well, to listen to the programming from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.